And from the KTOO newsroom, I'm Yvonne Crumry. You've heard the claim. Now that the U.S. is going to stop importing Russian oil, Alaska's elected leaders, including Governor Mike Dunleavy and the congressional delegation, say we should produce more oil on the North Slope to make up for the lost barrels. But it's not so simple. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin looked into the argument and found three things wrong with it.
Imagine you were going to serve champagne at your wedding. Just as you're about to head down the aisle, the caterer pulls you aside and says, "By the way, couldn't get you champagne, but we've got plenty of cinnamon schnapps." Yeah, no. Well, it's kind of like that with crude oil. There are different grades and different chemistry. Some is light and flows easily. Some is heavy like sludge. But the thing to know is that light and sweet, that means low sulfur, is easier to refine and relatively more expensive. And refineries are fine-tuned to the particular qualities of what the companies expect to feed into them.
A lot of people wonder why we are importing Russian crude or crude from anywhere, really, given how much oil the U.S. produces now.
Ryan Kellogg is a professor of energy economics at the University of Chicago.
The answer is that our refining infrastructure in the U.S. was largely built, especially in the 90s and 2000s, with advanced technology designed to process heavier, dirtier crudes like Russian crude, like crude oil from Venezuela, like crude oil from the oil sands in Alberta, Canada.
Kellogg is largely talking about the refineries on the Gulf of Mexico, where most of America's refining capacity is. The professor says the refining firms made a bad bet.
So all that refinery capacity, billions of dollars, was spent long before anybody had any idea that the shale oil boom was going to be a thing.
The fracking revolution came in 2010, producing tons of crude from shale. And what do you know? It's light and sweet. Yes, Kellogg says the refineries could retool and make use of that more valuable product.
It turns out to be cheaper to use that technology to process imported crude and export the light, sweet, clean crude to somewhere else.
Or you could blend some heavy into the light to optimize the refinery. Kellogg says we've been importing Russian crude from the Baltic across the Atlantic because it allows U.S. refineries to take some of that abundant shale oil and bulk it up with the dark, cheap stuff so they could run more efficiently. Alaska North Slope crude, ANS, is heavier than shale, so in theory it could be used to darken a blend. But, and this is the second point, geography. A tanker from Valdez would have to go through the Panama Canal to bring ANS to a refinery on the Gulf Coast. That's not very efficient.
The U.S. West Coast is really the captive market for ANS, with all the barrels basically going there.
Matt Smith is the lead oil analyst for the Americas at Kepler. That's a data firm that tracks shipments of commodities around the globe for industry and financial traders.
Russian crude deliveries into the U.S., and particularly into the U.S. West Coast last year, were really strong versus historical comparisons. But the reason for that was more driven by the pandemic than anything else.
Smith says oil from Russia's Pacific coast normally goes to China, but China's demand fell during the pandemic.
It freed up barrels to go elsewhere, and the U.S. became somewhat the destination of last resort. And so we saw more Russian crude coming into the U.S. West Coast.
Because China wasn't buying, Smith says refineries in California and Washington State got a big price break.
It was opportunistic purchases. Now, they were fairly consistent over last year. But that said, those imports have fallen off already. And so it's not like they can be replaced because there's nothing really to replace.
So this argument that we should produce more North Slope crude to offset the Russian barrels? Smith is sorry to dash hopes and dreams.
I just debunked it, yeah.
Yeah.
The third factor in this is time. It takes months to bring Lower 48 wells online and years to develop projects on the North Slope. Senator Dan Sullivan is among those saying that this is a long game. We will still be trying to keep aggressive foreign dictators in check years from now. We shouldn't empower them by buying their oil, the argument goes. So in the long run, we'll still need more oil from Alaska. But in the long run, we're supposed to be cutting back on hydrocarbons to keep climate change in check. The idea of producing more oil to make up for other oil will face strong political opposition. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
A proposed bill seeks to address high school dropout rates by putting educational plans in the hands of tribes. As KYUK's Olivia Eberts reports, supporters say tribal education compacts could lead to drastic improvement in education for Alaska Native communities.
Alaska ranks among the bottom states for graduation rates, and within the state, Alaska Native students drop out of secondary school at higher rates than their peers. According to data from the past three decades, Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta schools consistently have the highest dropout rates in the state. But the authors of a new bill want to change that by putting education directly in the hands of tribes. Senate Bill 34 would create a pilot program for Alaska Native tribes to begin running their own public schools through a compact agreement with the state of Alaska. The Alaska Federation of Natives collaborated with the state on the bill. AFN wants the state to allow five schools to be included in a demonstration project. After 5 years of funding, the state would reassess what's working and what's not. Hooper Bay Elder William Nanning supports the Tribal Education Compacting Bill.
Our people and our parents want to learn. They want to see the students excel. Our people are going to school being very curious.
Nanning serves on the board of a new charter school in Hooper Bay. The school's curriculum is centered around Yupik values called Yuyahak. He hopes the state will choose his school for the first round of demonstration projects. Nanning said that years of imposed colonial Western education in Hooper Bay has led to poor outcomes for students. Now, the graduation rates for the Lower Kuskokwim School District are among the lowest in the state. He worries this makes it look like Yupik people don't care about education, but he said that couldn't be further from the truth. He says Yupik people literally survive through education, but theirs is different from Western-style schooling.
We're taught as like a life and death situation, things that we needed to know in order to survive and do very well in the environment that we live in.
In order for students to succeed, Nanning says they need to be taught in ways that are relevant to their lives. That's why he said the education should be placed in the hands of the tribe. AFN President Julie Kitka agrees that the Western-centric model isn't working.
Clearly the state and the commissioners are already saying that the state is failing Native students right now.
Like Nanning, she's hoping for improved outcomes for Alaska Native students.
Greater attendance, greater life skills, greater community support, parent involvement, greater teacher recruitment and retention, all components that make a healthy school.
Kitka says she's worked closely on this bill with the Department of Education's tribal liaison, Joel Isaac. Isaac says the bill was carefully crafted to allow schools to restructure their school years around subsistence activities and create their own curriculum. The schools would still need to match standards set by the state and have state-certified teachers. But other than that, the tribes could implement whatever they want. Isaac says the bill acknowledges the sovereignty of tribes and their cultural differences.
There's not one clear education model for all Alaska Native peoples. That's not the case.
Isaac says this bill is modeled in part on the successes of a similar program in Washington State. Washington has three tribal compacted schools, and they've done well. Kodiak Senator Gary Stevens first introduced the bill in the Senate. On Thursday, the bill passed out of the Senate Education Committee with one key change. As written, the bill will have to be carried over to the next legislature for final passage. Bethel Representative Tiffany Zulkowski sponsored the House version. Zulkowski says tribes have great infrastructure and ideas in place to help compacting projects along. She pointed out that tribal health care is a good model in place for education compacting.
I absolutely am excited about this idea. Tribes are a quiet but mighty, incredible resource to providing culturally relevant services across Alaska.
Back in Hooper Bay, the charter school's principal says this bill will ensure funding. That will allow her to channel some of the school's resources away from grant writing and back into the students.
That's Olivia Eberts from KYUK. More rain and wind are expected today with temperatures in the mid-30s to low 40s. Wind speeds will range between 10 and 25 miles an hour. It's looking to be a bit colder this weekend. This is KTOO.